This is the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. I'm Bridget Grant, editor of the JN's Life magazine. As we bid the fondest farewell to comedy master Jackie Mason, it seems only right to remember his talents with fellow comics and fans. That is today's podcast. Losing Mr. Mason at the ripe old age of 93 is really a farewell to the legacy of Borscht Belt comedy, and it's fair to say there will never be another like him. I'm joined in this toast today by Peter Richardson, the alternative comedy king and founder of the comic strip, Steve Jameson, better known by his stage character Saul Bernstein, and Richard Brecker of Upfront TV, who knew Jackie professionally but adored him as a fan. In fact, you're all fans. So can we talk about what it was you loved about him? Peter, as Jackie would say, what are you? The goy?
I said, how do you like this? I can't believe I'm the only Gentile on this show.
But what was it? What was it about Jackie that you loved?
You know, when I first watched with the comic strip, they came around to my house to watch Steve Martin and the Jerk. And I think one of the best funny scenes in that film, which is a really funny film, one of the funniest films I've ever seen, is Jackie Mason running this garage and Steve Martin trying to get a job. And he's got nowhere to stay. And Steve Martin shows him this room, which is full of oil and tires. And there's a guy pissing in the corner. And he says, yeah, you can sleep in here. And he goes, oh, I could never afford this. How much, you know, he said, oh, nothing. Just send me a postcard sometime. And he goes, postcard, huh? All right. So, if I didn't tell that well. Anyway, that was my first introduction to Jackie Mason. And of course, after that, I hunted him down, found some of the best stuff, like Live at the Royal Opera House, which is wonderful. Have you seen that one?
I don't think so.
No, I don't think I have.
He's in this magnificent, you know, Royal Opera House theatre, and the microphone doesn't work. He goes, how'd you like this? A $500 million building and a 5-cent microphone. Because the microphone keeps breaking down, because everyone's supposed to use their voices, you know, they're supposed to project, aren't they?
Anyway, so you loved him as a non-Jew, which he often mocked, because, you know, goys were, which, you know, is not a very nice term, but that was one of his go-to terms for
yes, non-Jews.
Saul, your act is kind of almost built as Saul Bernstein on Jackie.
No, it's not. It's not. Basically, Soul's a lot ruder and swears, and Jackie didn't. Soul's more of a tribute to, I don't know, all the acts that came out of the Catskills, not necessarily Jackie. Having said that, he's the reason I started doing stand-up at the age of 46.
Really?
Yeah. With the greatest respect to Peter, I'm old school. I mean, I love Jack Benny, George Burns, and those sort of people. And when alternative comedy started, and I was obviously in my 40s, I hated it. It just did nothing for me. And suddenly, at the age of, I don't know, 42 or something, I found Jackie Mason. Every Jew in Northwest London was talking about the show The World According to Me, which was a big hit on Broadway. And then I bought in fact, he always said people just copied it and gave it away. I actually bought the cassette and fell in love with him. And then kind of, as I say, at the age of 46, with nowhere to go in my life, I thought I'll just try stand-up. And I did. And I'm still doing it.
You should have come to the comic strip. We would have welcomed you.
I know.
We had some very funny people there. Lexi Sale, Rick Mayall. They were incredibly funny.
In hindsight, I can see it now, but I didn't like it then particularly.
Tastes and comedy aside, he did actually unite audiences in his ability to, well, to be brutal about Jews, actually, and their behaviour. And he, you know, held a magnifying glass up to that kind of things that, as Jews, make us cringe. I mean, I have a particular penchant for part of his act when he would talk about Jews buying tickets for a theatre.
Oh, yes.
And it would be like, you know, he can't see, I can't hear.
Yeah.
Yeah, which was lovely.
My leg doesn't work this way. my leg doesn't go this way. She doesn't go. her neck doesn't go that way.
Yeah, we were creased up. I mean, you do that, Richard, as well. I mean, I've been forever impersonating him, but you actually ran his show, didn't you, when he was in London, the TV version?
I wish I could lay claim to that. I worked on a special the BBC did in 1997. It was produced by John Plowman, and I was very fortunate enough to meet him then. And it was a bizarre lineup. We had David Soul, Nigel Havers, and Rona Cameron, because Stephen Fry let me down at the 11th hour. But he was very gracious, I remember, Jackie, because he could tell I was a real, you know, genuine fan. And I started to try and impersonate him. He goes, "Don't ever give up your day job. Do me a favor, just think of what you do. You're no good at it. Leave it to the professionals." But he was charming. And I think it was actually you, Bridget, when you were doing a show on GLR, who sent me to either Claridge's or the Ritz to do an interview with him. And I was slapping this very, very heavy recording equipment. I think it was called a Ewer. And I went into the hotel suite. I think it was his manager, Jill Rosenfeld, was greeting us. A bit like Tom Jones, I think he was a bit of a late riser and he was still in his bathrobe. So I had to kind of adjust to the situation. And I was trying to get the interview going with this very heavy recording machine. And he looked me straight in the eye, goes, "You ever used this thing before?" I said, not exactly. He goes, "You mean the first time was in the studio when they showed you how to work this contraption? What are you doing coming here? You don't even know how to use it." But he was always very, very, there was a cutting edge to him. But actually, I always found he treated me with a lot of respect. He left an indelible mark in my life. And I went through the rest of my life inflicting my terrible impressions on family and friends for years.
Oh, there's no one better. He was fabulously funny, yeah.
He was, and yet it's interesting in his passing, and I have actually written about this week in the paper, that the outpourings of tributes and acknowledgement of his life was kind of the newspapers, the radio and TV, but there was very little from his comedy peers. Admittedly, comedy peers of his kind are sadly on the other side, because obviously he worked with Joan Rivers and New Carl Reiner and people like that. But there wasn't the acknowledgement. I mean, you know, Steve Martin was one of the people who in fact did pay tribute to him. And I wondered whether that's because in the comedy world, he was in fact, you know, ploughing his own furrow, more of a solitary comic for what he continued to do. You've got thoughts on that?
I think all his observations of modern life were fantastic, because he was commenting on things, contemporary things. And I liked all his stuff about, you know, sushi. What is this? Here's some fish I forgot to cook, you know, and all this sort of stuff. And he was just, he had a great sort of bitter view on loads of modern cars. You know, he said the more expensive the car, more uncomfortable it is. You get into a Ferrari, you're going to backache the rest of your life, you know, kind of. You know, he was fantastic. He discovered a whole, it wasn't just making fun of Jews, he was making fun of everything, everyday life, really, you know.
Yeah, and he also was incredibly cynical about politics generally, you know, the running of America. I know that, Peter, you mentioned he didn't like the French at all.
The Parisians were parasites. Yeah, that's right. Well, you see, there is a sort of problem between Americans and French anyway, aren't there? Because Americans expect them to speak English, don't they? And they don't like that.
Yeah, no, that's also true. But I think that maybe because he was also Trump supporting, and that doesn't go down well with.
Yes, why does that? What did he see in Trump? I mean, I can't understand that. You know.
I know, I can't fathom it.
Well, Trump was such a buffoon. I mean, God, he was so extraordinarily, outlandish.
I mean, we should remember that Jackie had always been a controversial character. He did a very cutting routine about Frank Sinatra, if you know that story.
Yes, that's right, about shooting, about getting shot at or something, wasn't it?
Well, he was taking the mickey out of the fact that Mia Farrow was so much younger than Frank Sinatra. And I think he was doing a show in Vegas, and Sinatra came in, and I think he said words to the effect of, "Oh, look, Mr. Sinatra's just come in from collecting his latest girlfriend from school." And, you know, allegedly Sinatra said to his crew, F the Jew. And later shots were heard ringing out in Jackie Mason's bedroom.
Through the window. He was on Desert Island Disc, wasn't he?
That's right. That's right. And of course, there was the famous incident when he was wound up by the TV host in America who wanted to cut short his performance. And the host, I can't remember who the host was.
It was the Ed Sullivan show.
That's right. And he said, you've got 2 minutes. And Jackie went, whoa. And then he was cast into the showbiz wilderness for absolutely years.
He thought he gave him the finger. That was the point of that, wasn't it? Yeah.
That's correct. And so he'd amazing. Always followed his own path. He was the son of a rabbi, and he was determined that nobody would shake him from his course. No. I remember writing to his manager, Jill Rosenfeld, and my mum and dad had been in hospital, and I said, I've got so much material. Does Jackie ever accept ideas or, you know, bits and pieces for you? And she said, no, it's a religion for Jackie. He makes, as Peter was alluding to, he makes his own observations. It's like a religion to him. And he was a genius. He was a one-off. I don't think we'll see his like again.
I must say how much I laughed and I really loved watching him. But I've always wondered whether he was actually not a very nice person. Is that wrong?
He married Jill Rosenfeld, didn't he, his manager? Jill is his widow now. I mean, he was, you know, much older since I've been dealing with him while he's been writing for the paper and responding to requests to write particular features and share his thoughts on certain subjects. I mean, he was charming and he even appeared on a Zoom, well, only a few months back for Passover to send his good wishes. I think he was a tough act in person. I mean, the fact that he was part of that Sardi's kind of New York crowd, you know, with a caricature on the wall in there, which is where when I lived in New York, I would see him. But, you know, he often had a younger woman talking of Sinatra on his arm. He liked women, as a lot of comics do. He wasn't sweet. I think Peter's right in that he wasn't a huggy kind of comedian. But then which few? I mean, there are a few of them, aren't there? Sol, you might be a huggy comedian.
I am. I'm very huggy, which is why this COVID thing is really, I was going to say peed me off. That's okay. Yeah, I'm a hugger. But I've done that all my life. That's got nothing to do with being a comic.
Yeah. I mean, Richard, you mentioned him being the son of a rabbi, of course, as well. And he was animated as a rabbi. Rabbi McCluskey.
It's quite funny that he was the son of a rabbi because most of his act included the words, you son of a bitch. Every gag was son of a bitch. How come you never heard him say son of a rabbi? It's always son of a bitch. Sorry, Richard. Son of a bitch.
Nazi son of a bitch.
Nazi
son of a bitch.
Have you understood a single word that I'm saying?
Oh, no, I loved all that stuff. Yeah. Mister, I'm talking to you.
This is like the battle of the Mason imitators.
The Masonette.
Yeah. Peter, didn't you deliver a wedding speech as best man as Jackie Mason on one occasion?
Well, I was just thinking about that and I just thought I probably wouldn't do it for you because it was so particular to what was happening. It was when my daughter was getting married right up on the middle of Dartmoor in a church, and of course we live about 15 miles away where we're having the reception. Jackie goes, God, we go to this place called Devon, there's churches everywhere, there's churches, and this, you can't be churches over this, churches there. What's wrong with this one? You know, we had to go to this one. And this guy tried to do a thing that we had to travel so far to this one. It was no different to any other one, you know. That was what I did. But it's because I got married in this church and my mother was buried there. So I had to give this reason why. And I did it as Jackie Mason. And Jeff Beck was the one who laughed loudest because he loved my impression of Jackie Mason. But I think nobody else got it. So.
I mean, Rock, he was much beloved by rock stars. I mean, I saw him in one of his last shows in London, sitting with Ronnie Wood.
I went with Jeff Beck.
Bent double. Yeah, I know Jeff obviously is a huge fan.
Jeff and I watched the Royal Opera House one about 5 times, and then we went to see him live at the Wyndham's. And I always used to do a lot of Jackie Mason for Jeff, you know, on the phone. You know, I'd phone up as Jackie, you know. And he absolutely loved it. And I was like, oh, God, you got your hair so long, you know, I can't believe... Jeff's got this sort of 70s haircut, you know.
You're going to have to forgive me, Peter. Is Jeff Jewish or a Gentile?
I don't think he's Jewish. I don't think so, no.
So you've got two Gentiles in the thing for the price of one.
Well, yes, two Gentiles for the price of one. Yeah, he and I both really just loved the humour, you know, very much. So we couldn't wait to go and see him. And he was great. I mean, it must have been about 6 years ago, I suppose, we saw him at the Wyndhams. One of his last shows, I guess, you know.
Gosh, it was probably longer than 6 years. It feels like 6 years. I mean, I saw him when Ronnie Wood was, you know, like I say, bent double. I mean, just loving him. But I think that it was a while ago. I mean, he still managed to, even in his twilight years, to be able to deliver a set and get big laughs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which is an art, because I have written that what happens with older comics is that they are kind of, you know, either popping up on nostalgia shows, looking back at their golden years, they're just put out to grass entirely. It's as almost as if that being funny only lasts until a certain age, which...
Don't say that, please. I've reached that age.
There's only a few people like Jackie Mason or Tommy Cooper. I mean, Tommy Cooper exactly the same. He would have gone right up to, well, he did die on stage, didn't he? But I'm sure he would have gone on to the very end just because they couldn't not do it, could really.
I think there was something quite graceful about him. Although he was quite a portly, rotund Jew, he had this lightness of touch, and the way he used to always jab the air with his finger, and he used to have these little sounds that he would have in his routine. Two people go. He had a certain sort of elegance and a certain lightness of touch. I almost like to have seen him on Strictly.
Oh, that would have been nice. He could have gone Dancing with the Stars in America. That would have been brilliant. That would have been awesome.
He would have assassinated the judges. He would have absolutely slaughtered them.
Yes.
He would have done. I remember going to the New End Theatre in Hampstead, which is where I originally first saw Peter, the beginnings of the comic strip, at Pentameter's performing as the Outer Limits, Peter and Nigel Planer.
With Arnold Brown.
He was two ethnic minorities for the price of one, wasn't he?
Yeah, I love Arnold, yeah.
Scottish and Jewish, you said too.
That's right.
Scottish and Jewish too, yeah.
Yeah. Jackie was there to road test, as a lot of American comics did, the understanding of Brits about Americans and names that he might mention in his bigger stage show. He wanted to see, at the time, I remember he made a joke about Leona Helmsley, the hotelier who went to prison and everything. And nobody in the audience, and it was a small audience, had heard of her. And he folded his arms on that very small stage. And he said, "You've got to be kidding me, although I can't do Jackie." He said, "Do you people read? Do you know how far I've come? You don't know this woman?" It's like, what is this? Cross it. And he was crossing, as comics do when a joke draws a blank. He was crossing them off, and he said, "You're leaving me with nothing here, nothing." It was like, he was like that. I know that during this COVID period, kind of locked away in their Manhattan penthouse, he and Jill, you know, really kind of struggled, because you get to a certain age, particularly when you rely on that, you know, human interaction. So I think that the whole COVID period that we've been through was particularly tough on him. And they were having building work. So a Zoom was always very interesting, because he would be looking like down with his chin to his chest and talking to me then. Do you think that there will ever be anyone or that style that comes into play again on the comedy circuit?
Will there be another Tommy Cooper? Probably not. No, I mean, they're so individual, these guys, aren't they?
Yeah, there'll be other Jewish comics. There are a bunch of us now working. The interesting thing with Jackie Mason, he was so Jewish. Bearing in mind how many Jewish comedians have been. Mm. None of them played on their Judaism, from Lenny Bruce, even Woody Allen.
Woody Allen did a lot.
Seinfeld, you wouldn't even know was Jewish.
Yeah, I guess it's because I think in America, it's more a style of delivery than content. You know, your Judah is out and you know. Yeah. And whether anyone else picks up on that. All the inferences are Jewish. And also Yiddish is much more part of common parlance in, say, New York, in the big city, than it could ever be here. Do you think that there is, and I did pose this in there, that when comedy commissioners get involved in program making, they are very, very blinkered about A, what's acceptable, B, what's funny, and probably aren't the best judges of what audiences might appreciate. What's your take on that?
I think because I'm Jewish, Jews are poorly represented on television. A number of people have seen me. Sol is rather rude. So I know that it's not everybody's cup of tea. I don't know if I'm proud of it or not. I'm just happen to be quite offensive. I mean, Sol's very Jewish, but the content isn't. That's the difference with Jackie Mason. He was very Jewish and the content was very Jewish, where I do one routine and the rest is kind of about being Jewish, but it's like maybe 5 minutes. Listen, there'll never be another Jackie Mason. There'll never be another Morecambe or Wise. There'll never be another Alexis Sale. There'll never be another anybody. But there's new people coming up all the time doing different things.
Yeah.
Was it you, Bridget, who said that in the TV series Friday Night Dinner, why don't they use the word Shabbos?
Yeah, I said that. I said there's no references to anything. I mean, it's called Friday Night Dinner, Robert Popper's program, and the family are Jewish in inverted commas. You know, it's almost like there's a kind of don't mention the Jew words, because unless there's a klezmer band playing in the background, it can't be passed off as being just normal life. I mean, you know, in Friends, you've got Rachel Green and Ross and Monica, and you know, but they are, we know, you just know, whereas it's just not a natural
England's a different, just it's just a different situation completely.
Is that because there are so few Jews compared to America?
I guess so. We're America's more kind of Jewish. I say maybe in Arizona there's not so many Jews. And it wouldn't work so well. But I mean, I play up and down the country and I'm absolutely shocked to get laughs in places where I think I'm going to get lynched. I'm delighted to say that. And touch wood, I've maybe twice in 27 years, I've faced anything like any form of anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
And this new age of censorship, people welcome people being outrageous like you and Jackie Mason, you know.
I was just going to say to Peter, because obviously, you know, working in comedy for all these years, do you think, though, that there's too much kind of control in that way and that audiences are much more forgiving and accepting?
They're all terrified. All the commissioners are terrified of being sacked for, you know, allowing something on that. We're living in this new age of censorship. It's quite, you know, restricting and quite dangerous, I think.
I agree with you. I think when Princess Diana died, I think Frank Skinner did a gag saying, the florists are doing well, aren't they? And, you know, it was complete silence.
Before we came along, before we came and ruined it all, I remember all these Irish people I used to know, used to tell Irish jokes, you know. It was kind of just, it's been this clampdown of people making fun of national characteristics, you know. And it was just, I thought it was all in good faith, really, you know.
I remember one show, I was either watching it or was involved with it, and somebody asked a question of Jackie. I think it might have been something to do with the Holocaust. And he said, what, you got to go and bring the whole tone of the show down? You got to take a whole negative vibe? We're having a fun here. You know, you got to ruin my show. I've got a question for you. How the hell did you get in the building? And, you know, he could take something as sensitive as the Holocaust or anti-Semitism and ride it out. I agree with you, Bridget, if that was your question, that commissioners probably are of putting a foot wrong, and we're living in a very woke age that I think has made comedy a casualty.
What do you think? Don't you think we should all kind of come together and create, I mean, a bit like Andrew Neil's done with that dreadful Good Morning Britain or whatever it's called, Good Morning, I don't know what the news channel's called, Good Morning News, but like come together and maybe offer the kind of comedy that, you know, I mean, certainly one's children although they're part of a new generation, you pass on your loves of comedy as you do in music. You know, you pass that on to your children. So there's no reason why a new generation wouldn't be as appreciative of the humour as we are.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think what Jackie did was he brought to the front the neurosis, the anxiety, even the depression that prevails a lot of Jewish people. But he enabled us to laugh at ourselves, and he enabled it okay for other people to laugh with us, not at us.
Yeah, I was going to say that's really important, though, that people laugh with us. My late mother hated Jackie Mason. She saw him on television. She thought he would do the Jews no good whatsoever. We were all going to get wiped out.
Yeah, that's a shame to think that, because I thought it was fantastically open-minded of him, you know, to do that.
Absolutely. Right, for our close, I'm going to ask all three of you, because you all do him, just do me a fabulous sort of farewell toast to Jackie as Jackie. Just a line. Richard,
you asked me on this show, you didn't offer me a dime, not a single pound, not a single dollar, but it's been a pleasure, it's been an honour, it's been an honour for you to meet me. God bless you. God bless everyone in the room. Carl, I've never seen you before. You told me you're funny. I don't believe it, but maybe you are. Good luck to you. Peter, you're a legend. Bridget, good night. God bless.
How'd you like this? I've been sitting here for 20 minutes. I haven't got a word, and I couldn't understand the word you were saying. sorry, I can't do any more.
Oh, bless. Oh. Well, look, thank you so much. I think we should, as I say, raise a glass of Polwens to Jackie, and to keep watching comedy like his. And Sol, thank you so much. Peter,
pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So much. And Richard. All right,
well, then. Cheers.
God bless Jackie. And that's it for this edition of the Jewish News Podcast. In association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, through its partners, GPG is working to support the growth of Jewish community life in the UK and worldwide. To find out more, visit www.gpg.org. All that's left for me to do is to thank our guests, the wonderful Peter Richardson, founder of the comic strip, Steve Jameson, better known as Sol Bernstein, fabulous stage act if you can catch it, and Richard Brecker of Upfront TV. I'd also like to thank our producer, Adam Bradley, for his work in post-production, and you for listening. Please do subscribe to the show in your podcast application. That way you'll hear any previous episode or be informed when new episodes become available. Don't forget that for more information on any of the stories that we've featured, you can always go to jewishnews.co.uk. If you'd like to comment, then we'd love to hear from you on editorial@thejngroup.com. That's editorial@thejngroup.com. So that's it from me, Bridget Grant of Life magazine. Do join us next time here on the Jewish News Podcast. Goodbye.